making art in this style was kind of like taking this big bowl of spaghetti that's all of my emotions and then like laying out each piece of spaghetti so that it's all organized and clear and you can see where the tomato sauce has spilled and like where there's too much or too little salt or whatever, you know? And
I love that.
it takes this like super amorphous, difficult to describe concept and makes it clear. And I think that's helpful for me as the artist, but then also for the other people who have these emotions and don't know what to do with them.
This is the Beware How show, mystic philosophy made practical. There are many paths up the mountain, and we're just pointing at a few of them. I'm Bob Peck, speaking with Scott Stanley, Ryan Padgett, and Melina Kiriaki. We are conscious creatives and formerly closeted mystics trying to unpack the inaccessible. According to the mystics, the truth cannot be spoken, but we'll try to talk about it anyway.
Hi, I'm Bob Peck. And this is the Beware How show. Speaking regularly with Scott Stanley, Ryan Padgett, and Melina Kiriaki. The Beware How show covers mystic philosophy made practical. We like mindfulness, metaphysics, non-duality, and a big part of the show is untangling misconceptions about spirituality. Today is Sunday, March 7th, and our guest is Elizabeth Nelson, aka Elizabeth AI. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me. It's so cool to be here.
We're very, very pleased you're on with us on this recorded conversation, which is what I'm calling these now instead of episodes. Elizabeth Nelson, she's a psych major from Trinity University turned graphic designer. She's from Austin, Texas. When she's not designing, she enjoys learning about maritime disasters, digging through thrift shops, and talking herself out of buying more houseplants. She's currently freelancing in New York City, beating off the quarantine insanity by going on lots of long walks. That is fantastic. Yeah. Follow this woman right now before we get into it. She's at lzbth.ai. Her work is incredible. Marcelo actually shared you, is how I found you. Visual Mantra, at Visual Mantra, and Marcelo does very interesting conscious designs. Marcelo's like my favorite storier on Instagram. He's just always sharing really interesting stuff, and I was like, who is this person? And then became obsessed with Elizabeth's work, kind of just stacking collaborations out with you. So thank you for being willing to collab with us and jumping on. Elizabeth, we want to talk about your work and your ideas and your process. But first, just tell us a bit more about your background, how you got to be where you are.
Yeah, so a lot of who I am right now didn't exist before the pandemic. I think I was a very different person, you know, about a year ago. I think a lot of us were. But when my entire life kind of fell apart because I was a student and I was a swimmer and I like had all these plans for my career. And then almost exactly a year ago today, it was just gone. It was completely gone. And so I think I kind of had to rebuild from scratch. And looking back, I'm really grateful for that because I wouldn't be a graphic designer and I'd probably be doing some job that I hate. I don't know if that exactly answers the question, but I think like it's important to, you know, recognize that.
Absolutely does, and I think it's extremely vital to have that level of self-awareness and self-reflectivity to like what you did was you moved with the way of things. Like you you adapted and like not even adapted, but you I would say thriving. Because you're very successful now as a graphic designer a year in, you're making a living doing this. You know, hearty congrats and
thank you.
You know, admiration for that. Yeah, absolutely. What was the like initial indicators or like obviously you liked design when you were studying psychology, you know, what was that how did you go from psych to design?
I kind of fell backwards into it because I was doing a couple of marketing internships at startups, and of course startups never have enough people to do all the jobs. So I ended up doing a ton of design work in addition to my marketing duties. And I just found out that I liked it, and it kind of like scratched that creative itch that I had been using, like photography and drawing and all these other things, to scratch in the past. But then once I discovered design, I just kind of like threw myself into it, and it almost became a coping mechanism for a little while during the pandemic. But then once I started my Instagram and like people sort of found me through that, I was able to turn it into a career. So that's been really cool too, because I always knew that I wasn't going to stick with psychology. I just thought it was interesting and it was going to carry me through a degree and then I could use it to get something else. So it's been really gratifying to be able to use that in design, because I think the two go really well together, but then like do something that I love with it instead of just working at some firm and doing things that other people tell me to do that I don't actually want to do.
I'm really surprised that you're only a year in. Looking at your work, I would have assumed, you know, you were like crafting this aesthetic for like 10 years or something. I don't know. I was so that's very impressive to hear about.
Thanks. That means a lot.
Yeah, it's true. It makes those of us who have been in creative realms for 10 years become more self-investigative here. Because you just, you know, hypernova, supernova out of...
Oh, thank you.
Out of, I like how you said it was like your coping mechanism. Like, that's hilarious. Like, some people did puzzles and like different random coloring books, and like you made design and like a new living out of it. So you win. You that's alchemy.
You just covered my secret. Oh no.
Yeah, creating stuff is incredibly therapeutic, I think, for a lot of people. So that's been, and a lot, and I think a lot of people have struggled too with the fact that right now, or at least in this last year, that maybe they don't have that energy, just because it's, and which I don't blame them. It's like, how it's kind of a miracle to have energy for anything right now. Mm-hmm. I think. So if you can do it, it's awesome. If you can't, it's like, it's fine. You'll create something later, but it's for me and a lot of people I know, it's like, yeah, just creating.
That's true. I think that's important to bring up. I've been on the more productive side as well, and kind of using this time as like a moment to make things. And so I can relate to Elizabeth, but I also, at the same time, I never want to be, you know, judgmental or condemn people for like just relaxing. I think also like pre-COVID, there was a speeding up quality to society and to everyone's daily activities and just going and doing and everything. And it has, I think, been a nice opportunity, despite the abject horror of the whole situation. You know, from the, one of the positives is actually that reflective quality, and like, mm-hmm. it's okay to just sit in the hammock for a few hours, mm-hmm. and not beat yourself up about doing the next thing. And I'm mostly telling myself that.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
How do you get your ideas?
That's a good question. Some of them, sometimes I'm like, okay, I haven't created something in a while and I know I'll feel better once I have. And so I kind of like force myself to come up with something. But then other times it just kind of comes to me, like maybe I'm reading a book and I see a quote that makes me think of something, or I overhear something on the street, or something just comes into my head, uncalled. I've been listening to a lot of Brené Brown podcasts lately, and I got a ton of inspiration from her.
Extreme love.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, and so sometimes I'll start with the image, and then I'll kind of work backwards, and I'll find words that fit this specific, you know, relationship of shapes, maybe. And then other times I'll start with the words, and I'll try to come up with a way to represent the words in a very clear, very visual manner. Because I think, you know, it's one thing to hear some words and it kind of like makes a little spark in your head and then it disappears. But then it's another thing to kind of see the words in this very literal manner. And I think, number one, it makes it have more authority and you're more inclined to believe them. And then number two, the visual imagery is so powerful that it kind of makes it stick in your head for longer. So that's really what I aim to do. I don't want it to just be something that you see and then stop thinking about. I want it to stick.
Yeah, and your work does that.
Thanks.
We had talked before this, and I think one of the realizations I had about your work and really like the whole kind of like conscious design genre, mostly taking place on Instagram. Even Pinterest, I think, is behind Instagram, just as an aside. Like, Pinterest is still a little like stock image of a sunrise with Garamond. And what you guys are doing that's not that, like, in a world of like Canva and like quote making apps and think like there, it's just very easy for people to make content with words and concepts. Like, it makes y'all's work that much more important to really sit with, like, what is the best way to represent this concept for people to understand it? Like, how can you break down to its core from a visual perspective what this idea is? And it's why I can't stop scrolling on your feed, because you do it very well.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, I think it takes work to make it, but then it also takes work to understand it, if that makes sense. And so the more you like invite the audience to put in that work, the more everybody gets out of it.
I like that you said too, that it was like, there's kind of a variety of ways, like you are either conscious of like, I want to create something right now and sit down and do it. And then you also have like you're reading a book and a phrase is just like too good kind of thing, where you're like, oh, that's like, that's a perfect idea. That's ripe for, you know, experimenting with. That makes sense.
And I can't say that there's like a difference in what I create, whether it comes like super organically or if I like try to pull it out of somewhere. Some of my favorite things have been the most agonizing to create. Some of the least favorite things I've made have like come to me in a flash. So who knows what, like, where the magic comes from. I certainly can't tell you.
Yeah, it can be a variety, I'm sure. I think that's a, is that a Rick Rubin? I follow him on Instagram. He has some great quotes on there. I don't know, but he's producer, music producer. And I think one of them was like, a lot of people think that if something comes easily, it must not be good. And then on the other side, people think that, you know, like if it came
like difficult,
too difficult, creation, then it's not good. It's like, right. And it's like, neither. Just let go of all of those preconceptions. Cause it's, you're all, if you make a rule, you're going to be wrong. You're always going to be surprised.
Yeah. Like, I think my most liked post right now, the whole time I was making it, I was like, this is terrible. I hate this. I don't like this at all. This is bad. Nobody's going to like it. And then like, now it has more likes than I have followers. So where did that come from and why? No idea. I can't tell you. And then sometimes I'll get like smaller accounts messaging me and they're like, how did you get all your followers? How did you do this? And I'm like, I cannot tell you. I have absolutely no idea. I'm happy, but
yeah, that means it's just the work expressing itself. So
that's amazing.
Do you, you mentioned that long walks are a part of your process, and being from Texas and spending time in San Antonio and Austin, now being in New York, how do you think New York itself as a environmental canvas has influenced your work?
It's a really good question. I think it's more like the relationship that New York has had with my mental health, I suppose, that's made me see things differently. Because when I was in Austin before the pandemic, I swam. So I swam for like 4 hours a day. I was constantly exercising. So I didn't have much of a social or personal life, but I did have all of the positive benefits of exercising. And then when the pandemic started, I went to go live in my childhood home in the suburbs of Austin, and it was really difficult to exercise, and there wasn't anywhere to walk, and it was Texas, so it was a million degrees. And I didn't realize how heavy that was weighing on my mental state until I got here. And you walk out your door and you can walk as far as you want. You could walk hundreds of miles in New York City and never see the same thing twice. And it's exercise, but it doesn't feel like exercise. Like you don't, totally. You don't have to like bait your brain into liking it because it's enjoyable. It's walking in New York City. And I've just felt like a completely new person. I like myself more. I like my surroundings more. Like I'm appreciating them and like really seeing them instead of just like letting them pass me by. And so I think that's affected it's made me more confident in what I create, I think. Just like having access to exploration, like unlimited exploration has made me like really believe in what I'm making instead of questioning it at every step. And I don't know like how exactly that connection works, but it does. So totally. Move to New York and walk around and you'll like what you make more is what I'm trying to say.
I had a feeling because I lived in Chicago for 4 years and I felt the same way. It was just like coming from a small farm town in Michigan, it felt like an endless world of inspiration. You know, like mm-hmm. I could just go out anywhere and find inspiration because there was so much energy and vibrancy of like kind of the pulse of the city, you know. And so I always just found so much inspiration from that. So I figured maybe New York had played a role in that. It's exciting to hear.
For sure.
This whole year I've been like mostly to myself, but saying like, how could anyone live in New York City? And you kind of changed my mind. Like I'm impressed. So wow. Now I'm more.
I've thought that for 30 years. So
I will say though, I did get COVID when I moved here and I have no idea how, because I don't have friends here and I don't like indoor dine or anything. So kind of glad to have antibodies, but know that the chance is much higher if you move, even if you're super careful.
Wow. Yeah. Totally. Glad you're all right.
Thank you. Yeah. It was pretty easy. It was an easy little bug, I guess.
Yeah.
Did that have any influence on your work? I mean, you know, in your bio, it says existential crisis meets textbook diagram. So I assume getting COVID might affect that existential crisis part a bit. Did that affect change your work in any way?
A little bit. It inspired one of my posts, actually, because it kind of changed my relationship with my body. Because when I got COVID, I was starving. I was eating like 3 or 4 times my daily intake, just like constant meals. I was so hungry. And at first I was kind of upset with myself. I was like, oh, why can't I be one of those people that just like glamorously wastes away when they get sick? But then I was like, that's such a stupid thing to want. Like, I hope my body gets weaker because of this sickness. No, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And so it made me like re-examine, like, no, my body's keeping me alive. Like I'm becoming a Dyson for food because that's what my body needs right now. And that's amazing. Totally. Like, great. If I gain weight while I have COVID, that's super cool. That means that I'm like strong.
Right.
And so that definitely like inspired a piece. But then on the flip side, one thing that they don't tell you about COVID is that you're so scatterbrained for weeks after you have it. And so I can't focus on anything. I can't get anything done. It takes me like 4 times as long as it usually does to do work. So it's made me more introspective, but it's also made it more difficult for me to actually finish projects, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that due to the disease or like just the kind of like psychological component of having the pandemic disease? Or both?
Yeah, I think it's just like a physiological something, because I know I can't really smell or taste anything right now, and I know that the reason that that happens is because the sensory neurons in your nose actually die, and so I think there might be something neurological that happens that makes it difficult to focus.
There's a really unfortunate like scarlet letter aspect like culturally of like getting COVID, and so I appreciate your vulnerability on having it and coming out of the other end and it was a minor bug and you used it for a piece and like, you know, I don't know. I think we need to clear the taboo, damn it. Like, this is something that so many people have gotten, and it's something we're all getting through together as a civilization. Mm-hmm. So appreciate you sharing.
Thanks. Yeah. I did feel really guilty, honestly, when I got it. I was so mad at myself. But then looking back, I was like, there was nothing more that I could have done. Like, I use hand sanitizer all the time. I don't indoor dine. I don't go maskless. Like, I think at this point, it's just going to happen to some people who, like, took every precaution and it's not their fault, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. So
I can relate to a lot of it too. I got COVID back in October and I felt the same kind of scatterbrained. I think I described it more as a brain fog, just like a total shutdown and feeling difficulty in trying to get anything done or create or anything like that. But for me, I just took it as a sign that I needed to just slow down and relax and not do anything. I just needed to like let my body heal and give my body that space to do that, even if it meant I was less productive or something like that. So it's an interesting process, but I'm glad that you're okay. Sounds like it was pretty mild. Mine was super mild too. So
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glad you got a well-liked piece out of it. Which most people, I don't think, are transmuting the pandemic, the disease itself, into successful art, but somehow you are. My favorite piece that you've done is I hope that one day you can see yourself the way your mom sees you.
It's so good.
And it's just, if this is an audio recording mostly, I'll put it on the YouTube, but it's a black circle with a one and then a vibrant red, orange, yellow circle in a mirror, and that's a two, and one is me and two is me through my mom's eyes. Yeah. And you know, the diagram aspect, you know, Ryan mentioned your bio of textbook diagram, existential crisis meets textbook diagram. Talk to us about that style a little bit. It's such a eye-catching, I don't know. I mean, I'll let you go on about it, but one thing you had mentioned to me was people trust it because we learned concepts by it.
Because you grow up learning things from textbooks. You know, you grow up learning, okay, if it's in a textbook, it must be the truth because that's how school works.
Right.
And yes, I think it took me a while to find that style because I didn't really think about it as design, but it is design. It's just design on the utility side of the design spectrum versus the art side, because there is like kind of a range between those two things.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like McGraw-Hill guy is going, how can I get this idea across?
Right. And like it is art, but it's art that serves a purpose rather than just like art that exists for itself. And so I think part of it was just kind of giving myself permission to make art in this way and to be like, look, it's art if you want it to be art. And I think it just, it helped me a lot, especially earlier in the pandemic. Because I was pretty unhappy for a pretty long time after everything started. And I'm a very emotional sensing person. So it was really difficult for me to kind of sort through all of that. And so making art in this style was kind of like taking this big bowl of spaghetti that's all of my emotions and then like laying out each piece of spaghetti so that it's all organized and clear and you can see where the tomato sauce has spilled and like where there's too much or too little salt or whatever, you know. And
it
takes this like super amorphous, difficult to describe concept and makes it clear, and I think that's helpful for me as the artist, but then also for the other people who have these emotions and don't know what to do with them.
Totally. It's cathartic. That reminds me, Jung talks about basically shining the light, the light of your consciousness, turning it around and shining it on the the observer. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a lot of mysticism and Advaita and all those things. But like within that psychological framework is showing the unconscious, making the unconscious conscious. And that's what you're doing. And that's that makes sense why it's so useful. I also love me. I'm going through it. It's me. And then this like warp diagram and it's it.
That was another one. I was so uncreative when I made that one. I was being totally slammed by this project that I should have worked out a contract for, but didn't know what I was doing at that point and like was just so overwhelmed. And I was just like unhappy, tired, uncreative. And I was like, whatever, I'm doing this. And then like everybody loved it. And I was like, great, okay, I need to just like make spur of the moment on the fly decisions more often.
That's wonderful. I hope, I mean, I'm really trying to listen to this. I hope everyone else is like those self-doubt questions, you know, they we should transcend them, get through them, mm-hmm. poke through them because they're not helpful and they're not accurate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the designs really do help with that. Like you kind of already answered a question I had, which was like how you see the relationship between, you know, design and like mindfulness in general. And your spaghetti bowl metaphor kind of answered my question, because that's the perfect way to put it, where it's like you have this kind of like knot, this big knot of like, you know, thoughts and feelings and what else is there to do except to lay them all out in order in front of you to take a look. And that is kind of that's what design good design can really do, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Works really well.
Yeah, like I think that there's so many different ways to do that, and I think it's important to do that. It's also important to recognize that like not every method of separating the spaghetti is going to work for everybody, so I think it's important to like try out a bunch of different ways until you find what works for you, because you know you can't just be carrying all these bowls of spaghetti around all the time. You know, you got to figure it out. You're gonna be so much happier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotta put it out in the world somehow. Mm-hmm.
Let everybody else take a bite of those delicious noodles.
I think that should be the opening line of the podcast. You can't be carrying always bowls of spaghetti all the time.
Right. That's the segment.
It's perfect.
Uh-huh. If this conversation doesn't inspire a piece, by the way.
Okay. Pressure. It's in the noggin. It's real rattling fresh. Around.
I loved the one with the, for some reason, the image is like, just like totally ingrained in my mind, but the one with the lemons, and it was just this, like my body, you know, like it was kind of talking about like, think, you know, when you're, you know, frustrated with your body for whatever reason, which I feel that, you know, I'm sure everyone feels that. And it's just like reminding yourself of the things your body does do for you. And one of those simple pleasures is being able to smell fresh lemons. And the image that you're designed for that really is just like, I see it when I close my eyes. So yeah, I love that. It's a good one to remember.
I'm so glad that resonates. Yeah, I really liked how that one came out. I love those lemons.
We could probably go through every piece. Just be like, and I like this one.
Let's do it.
How it's colorful and I think about it all the time.
Yeah, I guess not that as a podcast we're just like describing our right? designs here. It's not the most ideal, but I'm kind of into it. And it's just like, how would you describe design?
It's a rhetorical exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm loving it too. Who are some of your influences design wise but also philosophy wise you mentioned Brené Brown.
Yeah, I love Brené Brown. It depends on the podcast. I think the guest definitely makes the podcast, and Brené does like such a good job of like guiding the conversation and giving the thoughts the space they deserve and kind of telling the listener like, hey, pay attention to this one. Wait, okay, no, this thought, this is, you gotta pay attention, listen. And I think she does a really good job of like choosing people with really interesting stories and perspectives. Like I just listened to this podcast about this woman who was talking about like the gifts that you have in your life and like the choices that you make and just giving, I don't know, like methods to increase your own agency and like appreciate the reality that you've created for yourself and continue to make choices that construct the world around you. It was really cool. I listened to it twice. I couldn't get it out of my head. So I recommend that one.
I love that.
I became a big, like, existentialist, like, Camus person during the pandemic. Because, like I mentioned before, like, my whole life was gone, and, like, all I had left was the absurd. And so it was really helpful to me to kind of realize, like, yeah, nothing has meaning. All those things that you lost don't have meaning if you don't give them any meaning. So where do we go from here? Like, what do you want to have in your life? What do you want to care about? And so I think I'm kind of in the process of, like, building that.
He has one of my favorite quotes of all time. He says, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion."
Yes.
Brutal.
That's so good.
Fierce.
So good.
Yeah, he's terrific.
Yeah.
See how that would resonate right now too. Sorry, but yeah, just it's all a lesson in non-attachment, and a lot of his thoughts are, it leads you there, right? As mm-hmm. of that being able to let go, and like you said, not putting value or import, or, you know, knowing that that's not, those things you lost aren't you necessarily. That's a big mm-hmm. it's a big one to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important to, like, kind of have an existentialist phase and be like, nothing means anything. And then you can kind of start exploring other philosophies to, like, build the foundation on that acknowledgement of meaninglessness, I suppose.
That's so true. Wipe it all away for a minute. Mm-hmm. Zevi talked about that, actually. We had a guest on here about a month ago who is a Hasidic Jewish mystic. Came from very, like, Orthodox Judaism, but it's also mystical. He's a fascinating guy. Check it out, episode 20 whatever. I don't know. But he talked about that. He was like, I kind of had to have that moment of, like, distance from the tradition and kind of question everything and go secular almost for him, which was, like, extreme for someone growing up in a religious community and then finding out, oh, wait. You know, for what we talk a lot about on this show is the perennial philosophy, which is, like, the idea that all the world traditions within them nested underneath all these, you know, surface level differences. There's actually a lot of similarity and beauty and truth and wisdom that flows between them, and it flows between religions and philosophies and psychologies and literature and arts and and he started having that moment of, like, oh, wow, like, what, you know, this guy's a Christian mystic. What he's saying sounds just like what the Hasids are saying. And that, you know, this guy's just an artist. He's not tied to anything, but what he was getting across sounds just like this. And, like, once you have enough of those, you know, you're hooked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think for me, at least here at this point in my life, this is what I believe, is that, like, all, you know, philosophies and religions and even just, like, mottos and dogmas and stuff are just ways of interpreting reality, because you own your own reality, you create your own reality, and so whichever one works for you, that can be the absolute truth for you, and as long as it continues to aid you and serve you, then just throw yourself into it. That's awesome.
So true.
You know, because it's all kind of serving the same purpose.
Many paths up to the one summit.
Yeah.
Many rivers to the ocean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a question that came up. So you said that kind of starting to build out these designs was a kind of a coping mechanism and a way to kind of start to deconstruct some of the feelings that you were feeling. Marcella would like that one, huh? Deconstruct. He's
all about that. That's his whole thing.
he'd be all into that. But I'm curious that, I can imagine that the act of creating those images was a really healing process. But I also would imagine that the response that you got was just as healing, or even maybe more impactful, in kind of starting to understand those feelings and to reaffirm what you were actually feeling when you're, you know, the world is, like, reflecting that back to you and saying, yes, I love mm-hmm. this. Do you, I guess I'm curious to hear how much of a weight that plays for you. I know that for me, like, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about what I'm feeling, but I know that it really becomes solidified and understood within myself deeper when I share it with my community around me and it gets reflected back to me. So I'm curious how much of an impact that has had on you.
Yeah, it's definitely had a huge impact. 'Cause I think, you know, we all have such imposter syndrome with everything we create, whether it's a design or a thought or whatever. And so I think being able to put it out in the world and see that other people appreciate these designs or have these same thoughts or, you know, feel the same way during this weird time has been so helpful. And just at first it was almost like a crutch because I couldn't give myself that validation. And so I kind of craved the validation from other people. But then over time, like after putting these things out in the world and like seeing, okay, yeah, we're all kind of going through the same thing. We make sense of it similarly. Like we're all in this together. Has kind of helped me give myself that validation and like move past needing to ask somebody else, hey, do you feel this way too? And just being able to comfort myself, I suppose. It was almost like training, I guess, like, totally. It's like practice.
Yeah, I really like how you framed that. Like initially it was helpful and then you realized that you became dependent on that. And that was another kind of thing to get past in some quality. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's an important reminder because I think there is a lot of like, there's a positive and negative, right? Sharing things and sharing your heart, expressing yourself, being creative is positive. And it can help remind ourselves that, you know, I think what you were talking about is like, you know, you're not alone. We're not alone. Everyone is having this shared experience. But then you can say like, oh, like, they didn't like this one. They liked this one. You know, there's like, I think there is like an unhealthy potentiality that can come out. Like John Lennon talked about that, about like, he got so micro analytical about his music in his solo years and then realized like, oh wow, I just really like it when I just sing my truth and sing my heart. And like that stuff does the best anyway. And so, yeah, that's a difficult area to navigate, but you,
you
summed it up beautifully.
It's like the crutch can become kind of a ball and chain if you let it for long enough. Yeah.
Yeah. What you were saying was reminding me of like the trend of regression towards the mean, where all outliers will eventually regress back towards the mean at some point. And so I think that kind of has to do with like what I do with designing and especially with Instagram, just because a post that isn't like my other post doesn't do well, that doesn't mean that it's worthless or bad at all. It just means that it's outside of the normal range, I suppose. And so my posts that are a little bit more normal and like more towards the mean are always going to do better, but that doesn't mean that they're any better or worse than anything else.
Totally.
So true.
Yeah.
We have a podcast talking about obscure spiritual mysticism. And, you know, I've accepted that, you know, we have a core group of listeners. We have a humble audience. It's growing slightly here and there. But as much as I like look at the analytics of it, like that ain't why we're doing this. We're doing this to connect with other people that are interesting and like cover vulnerabilities and truths within themselves. And, you know, kind of Zevi and I, again, we talked about this about like a podcast about mystic philosophy. Like, could you get any less like mainstream as far as like what is trending on the podcast circuit? So hear you loud and clear on like the obscurity to popularity and like dialing that back and trying to be approachable and useful and helpful for people. But at the same time, like I also, you know, I know what I'm interested in and I want to do that. And I, you know, so it's a balance.
And it's interesting that you say that because I used to have a lot of social anxiety. I'm working on it. But now when I'm trying to write a text or an email to somebody, and I'll write it the way that I want to write it, and then I go back through and I edit it. And a lot of the times I get afraid of the things that I put that are idiosyncratic to me. And so I'll edit them to make it more bland or more vanilla or more safe or whatever. Hmm. And then I'm like, okay, but you're just making that the average. You're making this an average email. You're not making this a you email. Like, you're stripping away everything that makes you your own little specific constellation in the sky, you know? I don't know. So I've been trying to, like,
useful to notice that.
Yeah, yeah.
Kill that revising process. Mm-hmm. Just be yourself, kids.
Yeah, yeah. To not sanitize your own, like, personality for the sake of others' comfort, mm-hmm. maybe. Yeah.
They can deal with it. Yeah. Or they can leave.
Right.
Exactly.
Love it.
But yeah, it's specifically with the, as far as the social media side of it, though, it does seem like, and we all are part of it, but we are kind of obsessed with the numbers, you know, like how many people saw it, how many people are, you know, and it's like hard to remember that actually, like, quality is more important than quantity, you know, like if one or two or a handful of people are deeply impacted by something, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter, like, how many other people glanced at it, you know, it matters, like, if one person had an impact, you know, so, and which is hard to remember in a day and age when it's all about likes and followers and everything.
Van Gogh sold one painting to his brother. His brother, like, felt pity on him and was like, okay, Vincent, I will buy this one painting from you.
Yeah.
And then he died.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, even if that one person that's impacted is you, who, like, that should not.
Yeah, it changes your world.
You should give that more weight than, yeah, like, a million people who aren't you.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Who cares what they think?
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Date yourself.
Yes. That's Byron Katie, by the way. That's like my, Byron Katie's my queen. These guys know this. It's like the only person I freaking talk about now. But she's amazing. She does self-inquiry. It's called The Work. A set of questions. But yeah, like, people who are always like, I need a relationship. And like, she walks people through these false stories. And that's something that she would say is like, you're married to yourself. And like, you just happen to live with someone that, you know, you love and care about. But like, you just can't expect any kind of happiness from anyone else other than your own thoughts and beliefs. And then when you're in that space, look at how harmonious your relationships are.
That's so powerful.
Yeah, I love her.
She's amazing. She's like old white lady Sri Ramana. It's like how I think about her.
Yeah, since I moved to New York, and I don't really know anybody here, I see all of these cute little places. And I'm like, oh, I wish I had somebody to go there with. And then I was like, go there with yourself. Like,
go there with
why
me.
Why do you need somebody?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been taking myself out to lots of meals lately. It's been good.
That's wonderful.
Nice.
Yeah.
You'll find your scene up there, too. I mean, I think there's going to be a post-COVID celebratory. I think there's going to be like a bacchanal period when this stuff is safe. Like, people are just going to be like, and maybe almost to an unhealthy degree. Like, there's going to be some binge weeks for people.
Fantastic.
But it'll be pretty justified.
It's so funny that you use that word, because I actually have a personal project in my portfolio, which is this made-up bar called Bacchae, because I want it to be like a bacchanal site of revelry.
Yeah, that's funny. Man, yeah, you're probably going through, it's, when did you move there, you said?
A little over a month ago, I think.
Okay, so you're like, yeah, you're brand new. Fresh. Yeah, it's my wife and I moved to Seattle about 3 months ago, and
oh, wow.
I'm sure you're going through the same thing, but it's just like, right now it's like hard to meet new people and make friends and stuff. So it makes it tricky, but I'm glad that you're still getting a lot out of that, being in that space, you know, being in that environment, even if just taking long walks. That's an amazing thing. That's what we do here too. It's like,
love that.
Makes a huge difference, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
feels like you can immerse, even if you're not necessarily, you know, you don't have like some giant crew that you're going to meet up with. You still are part of like the the new place you're in. So
Yeah, you're walking through like a Miyazaki painting too.
We're doing the forest version, but yeah. wherever you get your energy.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Yeah, we're ferns what else, and moss.
Right. Lizards, what are you working on? I mean, we can tease all the things I'm snagging you on. but want to hear what else that, you know, I think you're pretty busy from a bandwidth perspective. I really don't mention the shirt shop very much on this podcast, but it's what pays for our Zoom account. So buy shirts there if you like this show. They're pretty affordable. They're really comfortable. Ryan's wearing one. This is the first like commercial on our show. So we've become capitalists at minute 45. It's Conscious Designs, right? It's like my favorite one is the You're Going to Die that came out from one of the episodes here, to just remind people of impermanence. but I talked to Elizabeth this week, and we're going to get some of her designs on there. So nice. I'm excited.
So excited. That's amazing.
It's like perfect. It was a perfect home for you. And, you know, hopefully more people will see your work. And I'm sure that this site will get more enthusiasm. You're going to up-level our entire design scene with just a handful of designs doing that. We're working on basically imagery for a writing project. So plenty of things to come. Mm-hmm. In the future. But yeah, what else is going on? What are you currently working on?
Yeah, I've got kind of a lot going on right now. COVID was actually a very
bad like, timing
work you take off. Yeah, something about like I got COVID and the universe was like, you know what she needs right now? She needs a lot of projects. Very exciting, but I'm also like but that's good. That's a good place to be. I'm kind of applying to some full-time things because as much as I like the sort of variability of freelancing, I think it's not where I see myself long-term. And it was also kind of a difficult introduction to the graphic design world. I feel like freelancing is more of like a late stage career option because it is very, you know, if you don't know how the industry works, it is very trial by fire. And I've kind of figured it out by now, but you know, I didn't take a single graphic design class and then it was my career and I was running my own business and I didn't intend to.
You're an asterisk in like 9 ways. You should talk to Ryan, by the way. Ryan has been a successful designer for 10 years and he worked at shops, he worked at production houses and he's been freelancing for, I guess, around COVID actually. Well, you were doing stuff on the side even at those shops, but now you're full-time, so.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
My career started right after college as a freelancer for about 3 years, and it very much was trial by fire. It's challenging. It's very challenging. It requires a lot of grit and just kind of dedication and pushing through, and it's hard work. It's like it's not a 40-hour work week. It feels like you're working all the time because you're just trying to keep the train moving, you know? Trying to keep momentum. And so I worked with a few different agencies for about, I guess, 6 years, maybe 7 years, and then now I'm back to contracting as of June last year. Kind of launched my own consultancy and I've been doing that ever since, and it's been so much fun. I'm just really, really enjoying it. And
you're swamped.
And I'm very busy. I have abundance, lots of abundance. It feels really, really great.
So. And it's called Belle Epoque. Check it out. Hire him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keeping the commercials going.
Thank you.
That's really cool.
I actually was going to ask the same thing. I'm curious how it felt, you know, it seems like it was a pretty big career shift. I mean, you were going to school for psychology, started doing this graphic design, realized you were really passionate about it. And now all of a sudden you're getting paid opportunities. I guess you already kind of touched on this. It sounds like it has been a little bit trial by fire and just kind mm-hmm. of figuring things out and stuff. But now you're thinking about looking for full-time work, you said? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at a lot of agency jobs, creative agencies, because I do, like I said, like that every day with freelancing is something different. You never really get complacent or bored. You're always learning. But I'd like to be able to work on a team and collaborate with things and just get another set of eyes. Because right now, especially with my COVID brain fog, I have absolutely no idea what anything looks like. And I've been like going on design Zooms with my mom, who's not a graphic designer at all, because I just like brain, no work. So, yeah, so I think I like working independently, but I also get a lot out of that collaboration. So I'm kind of seeking that out.
Absolutely. I think that's, yeah, spot on. That is a huge part of working as an independent that is really challenging, is that you're working on things by yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. And it is really important to have a community to bounce things off of and get other eyes on. And I mean, I can think all the contractors or kind of freelancers I know of, that is an integral part of the process, is having people to show your work that you like deeply trust, and mm-hmm. you know you want their opinion on it, good and bad. And so yeah, I know that that's definitely a challenging part, is not having necessarily a community. And I would say much of that for me and for the people in kind of my circles, those relationships did come from working at agencies. That's where they came from. And then, you know, everyone has maybe stayed in agencies or dispersed back into freelancing, but those connections have always stayed there. And I know that myself and, you know, other visual designers that I work with, that's a constant part of their process, is having people, you know, relationships that they're constantly bouncing ideas off of and showing work to. So I hear you on that.
Yeah, strong recommendation. I mean, for all creatives and creators listening, like, have a core group of 5 to 10 people that you can like text your rough draft.
Totally.
And they can be honest with you and tell you what they think. Like, that's incredibly valuable. I'm constantly sending these guys that I wrote this piece, like, for Medium or for, like, is this good? Like, what? I'm like, that neuroticism is alleviated by mm-hmm. the homies.
Yeah, and I think what stops me a lot is, like, you know, if I worked at an agency, then those people kind of have an obligation to collaborate with me. But when I'm on my own, I just feel like a burden on other people. But, like, when people ask me to look at their work, it makes me feel valued. Like, I think it's important to realize, like, how much people care to know that you valued them. And, like,
totally.
Even when you're asking a favor of them, that's, like, you can turn it into, like, a way to show your love.
Absolutely.
So I've been working
totally
on that.
I would say email me, but I'm just going to be like, it's amazing, period.
I don't know. Best, you only see the Bob. Final products. There's a lot.
I don't know how constructive I'll be.
That's not good.
Someone's got to see all the weird ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I think more people should. I think everybody should know that nobody is good all the time, you know? Like, stop presenting your best self. We're all messes most of the time, and that's totally awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people like to see the messy behind-the-scenes stuff anyway, so.
Nobody's good all the time.
Yeah. People want to see real life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are some, as we get into the practical act three, we've been talking practically, creative process, future design, who are you reading? What are some books or teachers that have influenced you? I know you said Brené Brown and Camus. Mm-hmm. Tell us more. We have a formulaic literature question for the show.
Oh boy. I have kind of just been reading some fiction since I got here. So it's been fun, but not necessarily educational. I do a thing where every place that I visit, I buy a book and then I write where I got the book from inside the book, and then I read the book while I'm there. And then that way, when I go back and reread the book in the future, it makes me feel like I'm back in the place where I bought it.
Nice.
Best Love souvenir. Yeah, I've been in touch a little bit with a professor that I had in college who taught rhetoric, and that was, I had to take it just for a graduation requirement, but it ended up being life-changing, and I took more classes with him, even though I didn't need to.
Scott's a rhetoric degree.
Yeah, that was what? My major at UT Austin.
No yeah. way! Oh my god, have you heard of Andrew Hansen then?
No, and it's been, you know, a while since I was there. So I'm not surprised by that, but that's amazing that you, it's not often you hear the mention of rhetoric
people
classes,
bragging so about rhetoric.
I'm all excited over here like, hey, that's my degree.
Yeah, rhetoric.
It's great though that it impacted you.
yeah so I've been thinking a lot about that lately, especially like in this new place with kind of no feeling of foundation. I've been turning a lot to rhetoric kind of to help me construct my reality and also to kind of question the reality that I brought with me. So it's been really valuable. Gosh, there was one guy, I was like thinking about this paper the other day, and I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote it, but he was basically talking about how like every conversation has sort of roles that people construct for themselves, and you can choose whether or not you want to accept that role and step into it, and you can choose the role that you create for the other person. And just like as somebody who knows nobody and is always having these new interactions with people, that's kind of a valuable thing to keep in mind, is like, I have so much agency in this conversation. I have so much agency over the person that I want to be in this conversation, in this interaction with this other person.
I love that.
I guess that's, yeah.
It's really liberating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very easy to immediately constrict yourself to a role.
Yeah.
Right when you jump into a new conversation or anything.
Yeah.
There's a quote from Alan Watts. He says, "You're under no obligation to be the same person you were 5 minutes ago."
Yeah.
That's what that reminded me of.
Yeah. That's so good.
You're just a new person every moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really are. Because no one knows anything about your past, where you are now.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But there's, I think a lot of people hold on to everything that they've ever done. And they're the cumulative effect of all their past.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to live like that.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it.
I wanted to ask about, Bob shared a project. It was your On Vulnerability zine. I'd love to hear you talk more about that, kind of how that came about and how that process went. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was... vulnerability was something that was on my mind a lot when the pandemic first started, because instead of, you know, being able to use all of these things that I did as defense mechanisms against trying to figure out who I was, I was just kind of like left with me, this floating consciousness in my parents' house in Austin, Texas, with no obligations, no life, no nothing. And that makes you feel really vulnerable. That makes you feel really naked. Yeah, and so I guess sort of as a way to practice designing, and then also as a way to explore that feeling more, I decided to ask a bunch of my friends what vulnerability meant to them, because I was swimming in vulnerability and I wanted to feel connected to other people. And then I decided to make it alphabetical. So I'd ask a friend for every letter of the alphabet. No idea where or why that idea came into my head. But then that was interesting because it kind of turned this exploration of vulnerability into an exercise in vulnerability, because as it turns out, I don't know anybody whose name starts with T. And so I had to reach out to this guy that I was an acquaintance with like my sophomore year of high school. And that's scary. I didn't like doing that at all, but I kind of felt better after the fact. So
that's like the extreme opposite of the join the MLM high school acquaintance outreach. Like the extreme opposite. You're like, so what does vulnerability mean to you?
Yeah.
He was like, Elizabeth? Anyway.
I had to like preface some of the, like when I would reach out to people, I'd be like, I'm not asking you to join an MLM, but can you answer a question for me?
So how is
But would
work?
You like to have make a living? You know.
How did his work compare, the guy that you had to reach out to? Was it, were you surprised? Was it like, what did he create that, or how did you feel about what he created?
He kind of just gave me like a really short answer. I don't think that he like really wanted to talk to me, but he gave me an answer in the,
that's good.
The book.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I'm really glad Ryan mentioned it because, I mean, the illustration's fantastic, but it was interesting to see different people's takes. I think resistance to vulnerability versus more embracing of it. And the spiritual traditions, not to be too pretentious perennialist, but that's me, I guess. And everything about vulnerability that is put up on a high ideal in spiritual systems, like this term surrender. I mean, this is, Ryan and I talk a lot about surrender of, like, in the West, surrender is like terrible. It's defeat. Like raising the white flag and, you know, cowardice and like you lost weakness. The battle, weakness. And in Eastern spirituality, vulnerability is fearlessness. It's like, it's an invulnerability. Like your embrace of it is, and surrendering is like you don't have to have some kind of fragmentary forcing of who you are. Like you just accept who you are, and it's just liberating.
It's power.
So anyway, yeah, there was a very interesting spectrum of like it kind of reminded me from, I put down my Ramakrishna book and going through your zine, it was like, oh wow, yeah, this is actually something that is on the spectrum for people, and that they have some hesitations with it and more embrace of it. But it was great. Yeah.
And it's funny that you say that, because that made me realize that now, because I didn't even know what vulnerability meant to me when I was putting together that project, but I realized that now I know. And it's the realization that you can give yourself everything that you need, so it doesn't matter what other people try to take from you. And so you can surrender, because
you
can't lose anything, because you have everything in here. That's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, self-confidence and the strength that comes from that, and that you're not afraid to expose yourself, because you know who you are. That's like a powerful place to be.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. You could just really sit nice. In that.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna stick. That's mm-hmm. this.
That, that might be the piece.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, Elizabeth, do you want anything else to tease out or promote, or are those projects still in development, or anything that people should pay attention to
on just, your end? Or? You know, keep up on the gram if you want.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
kind of taking a little at step back
from LZBTH.AI.
Yeah, sounds like a sneeze. Yeah, I've been kind of like taking a little bit of a step back to like get in touch more with the reason that I started it. So I'm kind of like slowly putting it back into my life, because I had been caring about the numbers too much, and so wanted to focus on creating for myself again.
Mm, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for
excited
having me.
Excited to get your designs on the shop. More collaborations coming this year. Come back and see us. It's been a lovely Sunday morning with Elizabeth in the skyscrapers of Midtown. But yeah, thanks so much for sharing and for really getting in touch with your own processes and your own existential crisis and articulating that for us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thanks for, you know, helping me realize some things about myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just email me if you need any validation.
For sure. Okay, I will.
I'll give you a bunch of exclamation points. Awesome. Thanks so much.
It's so nice to meet you guys.
Bye.